Well, hello, fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. My name is Chris Lockhart. I'm your host this evening, or this morning, whenever you're listening to this podcast. I'm your host. I'm hosting this. Joining me is for this week is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
How's it going? Second billing on the show this week. My substitute mic two position.
Excellent. All right. Well, for this episode, we are talking our top five TV show intro / themes. And I just wanted to throw this out there. We are going to be talking about TV show intros and themes. I highly recommend going to YouTube to check these out. I'm not going to be inserting them into the podcast just because there's going to be too many. Because we're going to be doing our top five, but we're going to have honorable mentions. And, honestly, my program software sucks. It's not the best. It would take me forever to cut all this. So, when you hear what we're suggesting, if you've never heard it before or you haven't heard it in a while, I suggest just going to YouTube because all of these are on YouTube. Everything's on YouTube.
I thought you just didn't want to risk a cease and desist.
Actually, I've never ever been contacted. I've used clips before. For our Ender segment, which will be at the end of the episode, I use part of the Magnum PI theme for that.
Yep.
Thankfully, I haven't been sued. I think for podcasts, you get a little because they're free. I think we get a little bit more leniency when it comes to that sort of stuff. I think if I was charging people for this podcast, then I think they could come after me. I think that's
my current understanding as well. There's sort of like a fair use journalistic purposes review.
Yeah.
But as soon as you start monetizing stuff, we both listen to lots of other podcasts, but if all of a sudden you had, hey, go to stamps.com or whatever, right in the middle of it, then you start getting into the trouble.
Yeah, because I know there's this one podcast I listen to where they actually pay for the music that they use on their show, but they also, their podcast is free, but they do a Patreon thing. They ask for donations, that sort of thing. They actually have sponsors, so I think that's why they have to pay for their music and stuff. Whereas, I do this for fun. I do this so I can talk to people like Kevin and Jason and Rich and MDJ. I love talking about pop culture stuff. So I do this for free. I actually, the server fees and all that, I just pay out of my own pocket because for me, this is like, if I was joining a sci-fi club or something, like this is kind of, I just do this for fun. I'm not looking to make money here. That being said, if there's any radio stations or whatever wanting a host, I am available. Except for when I'm working. But, all right, well, let's get into our top five TV show intros / themes. And the way we work this is we count down from five to one. So, coming in at number five, Kevin, on your list, sir.
Okay. So, I wasn't sure if we were going five to one or one to five previously. That's my bad. Number five, I'm going to go with Knight Rider.
Nice.
Love the beat. It's just, I've probably only watched a handful of Knight Rider shows in my life. Just here or there, I might watch it. Mostly when I was a kid, but occasionally, I'll be somewhere flipping through and it's on and just toss it on. But man, that music is just iconic. It gets you excited. It's familiar yet sounds futuristic. There's also rapper Busta Rhymes took it for the beat for a song, and I went nuts first time I heard it. I was like, this fits, this absolutely works. I can't believe no one sampled it / stolen it before. It was just so great. I had to play in my car, crank it up and everything. But I would love to know the process. Because you know they all, someone sat down and was like, okay, what's the show about? What's going on here? And came up with that.
Mm-hmm.
Which you could put on a show. I mean, I know they've tried to reboot Knight Rider a couple times. But Knight Rider could be a brand new property now with that music, and it'd fit right in.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly. But yeah, and it's like, this was a fun thing to make the list up for. Because I kept thinking, I was like, some of these I could play, you know, in my car driving around as is. Not mm-hmm. as a sample, not mix in something else, not, you know, whatever else, just as is. Put Knight Rider on a long enough loop for like 5 minutes for, you know, radio, I'm there.
It is a great theme. It's not just Busta Rhymes. They're a guy or a band called Punjabi MC. I believe that's who they are.
Oh my gosh. Where did you pull that one out of?
Have you heard it?
Yeah.
The Indian,
forgot it.
Yeah. The Indian version of it?
I'd forgotten it, but yeah.
My sister, for several years, like my brother-in-law is Swedish, from Sweden, and my sister lived in Sweden for a while, and they were friends with people from India that were also going to school in Sweden at the time. And, they were playing it at a party or something one time, and my sister heard it, and she's like, oh my god, that's a Knight Rider theme. So she got it, and then brought it back to Canada during one of her visits, and played it for me. And I'm like, I have no idea what they're saying, because, you know, they're speaking...
don't care. It sounds so great, though.
Yeah, they're singing in Indian, but it's awesome. And what's funny is it's on, I have a USB with, I don't know, like 3,000 songs on it. So when I'm at work, because part of my job, I'm a field operator, but I'm also a control room operator. So half the time I'm in a control room, I'm sitting at a computer. So I have a USB with over 3,000 songs. I put it on there. And our process engineer, he's from India, and half the time I'm not even listening to what music's playing. I just have it on in the background, and that came on, and he just lit up. He's like, why do you have this song? I'm like, because it's, you know, I told the story, my sister brought it over, you know, she introduced me to, you know, this song. You know, it's the Knight Rider theme. I grew up with this theme. He's like, do you even understand it? I'm like, no, I just, it sounds awesome.
No.
the great choice. And I just wanted to point out, on my list, if I have one of yours, like I'm sure you have some honorable mentions. Feel free to insert them in, and I'll do the same. Like, okay. if you name one of mine. And then we can just mention that would have been, you know, what number on our list. So for me, number five is Star Trek Next Generation. I love that theme. Going right from the start, listening to Patrick Stewart recite, you know, space, the final frontier. These are the voyages, you know, in his beautiful British accent, and then, you know, in him saying to boldly go where no one has gone before, and then you see the Enterprise going into warp. Man, it's so, like, honestly, my favorite Star Trek opening. The theme is awesome. You know, they borrowed it, they lifted it from Star Trek the Motion Picture. It's a score. Who's the composer? I can't remember the composer, but I want to say Alexander Courage was the composer. I could be wrong, but they lifted it from Star Trek the Motion Picture. They used it on the Next Generation, and then with, you know, Patrick Stewart, you know, doing the narration to start it off. It's just, in my opinion, it's the best Star Trek opening theme. All right, so let's move on to number four. Kevin, number four on your list, sir.
No, I will say I purposely did not pick anything Star Trek because I had a feeling you would. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want too much crossover. But for number four, and I have faith in you, Peter Gunn. Which I knew as the Spy Hunter theme from the video game.
Okay.
But it is... Dun 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 dun. And then the horns come in.
Yeah. Oh.
But oh, yeah. It was. I remember an old video game, Spy Hunter, had it, and now I don't know if they lost the rights or what. But anything I could remember Spy Hunter. I was like, where did that theme come from? Mm-hmm. So I was looking up, and everything has it pulled. But finally, you know, I stumbled across something that was from Peter Gunn. It's an old cop show and everything. So I look up the show. Oh my gosh, it's a pulp. It's a 1-hour dramatic pulp novel for every episode.
Nice.
So I thought, well, and most of it just because of, you know, where we are for copyright laws and what people, you know, renewed and think there's still interest in all. There were a ton of episodes for free on YouTube.
Oh.
I was like, I think I might deep dive on this.
Nice.
Because I love discovering, you know,
yeah,
a lot of that old, you know, the serial, not retro serial, but, you know, the serial type stuff, the pulped Shadow, Spider, all of that stuff. And this fell right into it. For first 5 minutes of episode one had two crooked cops. And I was like, oh, we're not playing around here. Which, you know, we all have this, rosy image of, you know, oh, every black and white TV show was literally black and white. You're good guys, you're bad guys. There's no gray. There's no, you know, differences and all. I don't know why, but we all think that, like, it was more innocent or simple. And it wasn't. But for some reason, that's what was put onto us growing up. So that's what we believe is true. But, geez, the theme is just incredible. Jazzy, big band, but there's just something more to it, too.
Yeah, I when you first said that, I wasn't, like, it sounded familiar, but yeah, when you describe it, it's like, yes, of course I know that theme. One version of it that I love, I don't know if you ever heard it, they combined that theme with the Police, Every Breath You Take, and they used
it. Really?
Yeah, they used that for a scene in the season 3 premiere of The Sopranos. So they intercut between Every Breath You Take with that theme, and they go back and forth, and the way they do it, it sounds awesome. Again, it's on my USB, so every once in a while I hear it because I bought it's from a CD called from The Sopranos. It was Sopranos Peppers and Eggs. The CD is called. It's a 2-disc CD, but yeah, that is on there. So and the to give it some perspective, when they use that theme, it's when the FBI is trying to put a bug in Tony Soprano's house. So it's them, like, doing all this, like, covert stuff, trying to get into his house while, you know, the maid is preoccupied, while Tony's off at work, while Carmela's doing the shopping. You know, it's them trying to get into his house so they can plant a bug. Great episode. Yeah, and great choice. That theme's awesome. Number four on my list is the only animated series I have on my top five list. I have some honorable mentions here. But X-Men the Animated Series.
Oh, good pick.
Yeah, I love that opening theme. You know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, awesome. The animation was great. You know, it was an act, you know, like the visuals they give you in that opening credits. It was great. It really set the tone for the series. And yeah, honestly, I really wish they would use that theme in the X-Men movies. Maybe they will.
Oh, no. I think they will, just like how our two Marvel co-production Spider-Man have the echoes of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
The cartoon theme. I think once we get an X-Men MCU one, they'll have echoes of it. Just the reaction theater, if you play a trailer and all of a sudden you have like an updated sample tribute, you know, orchestra version of that X-Men theme song, people are going to go nuts. They'll just turn right around and say, here's my money for the advance ticket. I don't care when it's happening. Here's my money now.
Yep.
I have to see this.
Yep.
I'll try to see if it's available on its own. Comic podcast I listen to right now has a segment called The Mutant Minute, and it's a friend of the podcast is reviewing House of X and Powers of X as they come out every week and simplifying it for people.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, they do a piano version of the X-Men theme song.
Nice.
It's so pretty. And the first time I heard it, I thought, I can't believe I'm actually hearing this. There's no way this is what I think it is. But it is. And they open and exit the segment with it. And I look forward to just that music every week now.
Nice.
So see if it's isolated somewhere.
Cool. I know I have used it on like one of my other podcasts. We did an X-Men episode, and I know I've used it before. But yeah, it's terrific. Kevin, number three on your list, sir.
So number three is funny because I'm literally picking the song. It's a glaring gap in my geek cred. I have not watched any of Smallville, but I gotta put in the song.
Save me?
I gotta put in that theme song. Yep.
Yep.
It's just so wonderful. It's a perfect choice. It is a heroic song, especially when they start putting in all the images. How could you not be excited for this?
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a heroic song. I think if all of a sudden, let's just pretend here. Let's say for Crisis coming this winter, they want to throw down there, it'd fit. It would fit perfectly for any of the CW shows. If they just wanted to do it as a throwback, as a tribute, it would fit right in today. Talk about one if they threw that in. In one of the Superman movies, too? Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Show went 10 years. There's a built-in audience that would love to see that echo of something familiar on screen.
Yeah.
But well, and I don't know why. I don't know why Smallville never happened for me. I actually own most of the seasons on DVD, so they're sitting right here. Just never happened. But, boy, that song, even never watching it, I'm still putting it up there. That's how strong that is.
Awesome. I watched the first two seasons. Like, I remember I liked it enough, but for a while, like, especially in the first season, it was always like a Monster of the Week episode. Where somebody was infected with kryptonite and it turned him into, like, a super monster or... And that always kind of bothered me. I'm like, since when does kryptonite turn people into monsters? Like, I don't get that. But yeah, like the theme was awesome, and Tom Welling I think was good. I think the cast was all good. The guy Michael Rosenbaum who played Lex Luthor, I thought he was terrific. John Glover playing Lionel Luthor was fantastic. Like I said, I've only watched the first two seasons, so yeah, that's one of those that maybe one day I'll go back and give it a rewatch.
I feel it was, at the time, I thought, this isn't Superman. This isn't my Superman.
Yeah,
this isn't what I want to show, so I'm not going to watch it. But now that we've had so many things, and we've seen the extreme of it and the troll versions of this isn't my insert hero name here. And you and I have talked before, and most people in our group, okay, no, it's not yours. Can someone else enjoy it? These are icons for a reason.
Yeah.
Was just, as long as the basic is true, hey, Superman came from Krypton, he is Clark Kent, he has these powers, he has mom and dad in East Smallville, go. All this other stuff doesn't matter. The truth, the boiled down part is still there. So now, you know, I'm saying that much older now, geez, what is that, 20 years maybe for Smallville? First one?
It's got to
be close.
Oh, I want to say 2001 it premiered. Or maybe 2000. So yeah, we're coming
to 20 years.
Yeah, we're coming up on it. Yep.
Yeah, and I just feel like who I was then probably did, you know, hate it because it wasn't mine and it wasn't pure and whatever. Now older, I'm like, okay, I could watch it for what it is and enjoy it for what it is. Be mature about this and just, you know, find a month for me to do it with all the other shows and movies I want to watch too.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a lot on the back burner. So for my number three, this was actually the theme that gave me the idea for this episode. I'll set the stage. I went over to my sister's house to go visit my sister and my nephews and my niece and my brother-in-law, and my sister is binge watching Unsolved Mysteries, the 90s, late 80s, 90s, you know, Robert Stack hosted Unsolved Mysteries. And it was that theme. I was like, God, I totally forgot how great this theme is. And the reason why this episode is TV show intro / themes is Unsolved Mysteries, you know, Robert Stack had that, you know, that voice and that authority as a host, which was absolutely, you know, stellar. But he basically lays out, you know, the way Unsolved Mysteries works is there's like three or four stories that they tell in an hour about an unsolved mystery. So the intro is him breaking down which each story is going to be for the episode. You know, he's giving you a preview of what's to come. And then he does the, you know, join me in helping solve a mystery. And then it, you know, you get the powerful theme that is Unsolved Mysteries. And I got to say, like, that theme sends a shiver down my spine, you know, because it's not scary, but it's, I don't know, it's got like this mysterious quality about it. And I don't know about you, but for me, like, I don't know if you ever watched Unsolved Mysteries or, you know, like, for me, it was, for our family, we always watched Unsolved Mysteries, right? Like, it was one of them weekly shows that we watched. You know, the odd time, you know, there would be no one else at the house. Like my dad would be at work. You know, my mom would be taking my sister to a dance recital or something. And I'd be home alone. And, you know, hearing that theme music, like, there were times that, like, I was scared to be home alone just because I'm watching this show and hearing that music. I don't know if it was a 90s thing, but that theme was fantastic. What about you, Kev? Did you ever watch Unsolved Mysteries?
There's so much. Like, we got to be careful here, or else it's going to be its own episode. So, I was so scared of things like that as a kid, but so tempted by it, too. It was such the forbidden fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like, you know, mom shut it down or anything. I was shutting it down for myself. Like, I can't handle this. This is too scary. I didn't get into, like, horror till I was older. You know, anything like that. If I thought there was too much going on, I just shut it out of my life. I'm like, I can't do that. But Unsolved Mysteries was so tempting. I always was into, you know, Bigfoot, UFOs, you know, ghosts, any of that stuff. Which they would have some of the time. Then they'd have their true crime stuff as well. And I would try to watch it and say, I'm out. This is as far as I can go. I'm too scared. I need to, you know, read a comic, find a cartoon, something else to, like, cleanse the palate before I go to bed, because I cannot handle it. And you're right, there's other shows, In Search of, Sightings. There's other shows that did similar, but they didn't have the song.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about that. I don't know if there's, you know, someone familiar with how the brain works could say, oh yes, the harmony, the pitch, the beats per minute, the whatever, has this effect on your brain, and that's why you're having this reaction. Wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me if someone ridiculously smart in music purposely set this up, and we're having a reaction to just the music would not surprise me. Because how many other, you know, unexplained or paranormal or mystery shows have we all watched that don't have that music? The episodes are just as scary, just as disturbing, but they don't have that. Mm-hmm. It was just something. And side note here, a member of my family actually has a very popular paranormal podcast, and I can send it to you later. So October, he's going to do an episode just about Unsolved Mysteries.
Cool.
But he, it's a long story for later, but he got inspired by the biggest paranormal podcast in the States right now. He got inspired by that, started doing his own research. So he'll just go online, buy a bunch of stuff on one topic, do like graduate school level research, and then release a podcast once a month on here's everything I've dug up on this. So he's going to do an Unsolved Mysteries one. And I was like, I can't wait. But if you throw that music in, I might turn it off.
Awesome. Yeah, I think you're right. They must have done something. Like, they must have researched that, like, this will make people want to watch it, you know, but yet at the same time send chills. I remember, I want to say it was like 1990, maybe 1989, watching an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. I know it had to do with alien abduction, right? And people being abducted from their homes and stuff. I remember because I was only like 10 years old at the time, or maybe 9 years old. I remember being so scared that, because my dad was working nights. The reason why I know this is because that week I slept with my mom. Like, I could not sleep in my own bed because I was so scared. You know, and my dad wasn't there. So, you know, otherwise I probably would have just slept on the floor in their bedroom. Because I didn't want to be abducted. You know, and that's just how much that show got to you, right? Like, it got to me anyway, as a 9 or 10 year old kid. You know, but yeah. Anyway, you know, walking into my sister's house, I sat and watched a couple of episodes with her, and I'm thinking to myself, I totally forgot how great this show was, and it just kind of makes me, like, I know, like, it continued into the 2000s with, I can't remember that actor's name. I'm sorry, I'm blanking on his name. He was an actor that was on Law and Order for a little bit. He's been on a lot of mafia movies. He took over hosting Unsolved Mysteries, but it was never the same, and I think they changed the theme for that, like, when that in version of it.
Yeah, but it's the Robert Stack ones everyone wants.
Yeah, it's the Robert Stack ones that are amazing. And apparently, because this is streaming on Amazon Prime in Canada, I'm not sure if it is in the States as well.
Most of the streaming services, it doesn't seem like everyone has the same episodes, but it's been like piecemealed out. So if you have some streaming service, you'll find a good chunk of them.
Well, one of the neat things, you know, from what my sister was telling me with Amazon Prime Canada streaming Unsolved Mysteries, is they actually have current updates of some of the segments. So
I don't know if I would want that or if it'd make me feel even worse.
Yeah, some of it would be neat. Like, you know, like, say this person's searching for somebody, and then you find out, you know, like, the update is in 2014. You know, they did find each other, and, you know, like, something like that I think would be okay. But some of them, you think there would, like, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, there's going to be an update, and then there's no update. So obviously that person's still missing, or, you know, Bigfoot still hasn't been found. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, number three, Unsolved Mysteries. Kevin, number two on your list, sir.
Right. Well, briefly mentioned beforehand, and I wasn't even planning on it, but talking about needing to watch something lighter to cleanse the palate after Unsolved Mysteries, I'm going with the 70s Spider-Man theme from the cartoon.
Like, the original Spider-Man? Like, the 60s version?
Or the 60s one, yeah. that does whatever a spider can.
Yeah, Spider-Man, yeah. That one. Okay, nice.
It came out of nowhere today. I thought, oh my gosh, how come it's not on my list? Like, it was just such a glaring omission. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, it's immediately on it now.
Yeah.
I was writing something up for somewhere else that'll be posted later this week, and I had to bring up a CD of cartoon music to make a point, and then I was listening through stuff. There is a album of nothing but, like, punk and indie bands doing cartoon themes, and the Ramones do that Spider-Man theme.
Yes, I think I've heard that before.
So, yep, so good, so ridiculous. But for me, growing up in New York, WPIX, Channel 11, mm-hmm. which is home of the New York Yankees on TV, would play that Spider-Man reruns by the time I'm seeing it as part of their syndicated after-school loop. But it would start at like 2 or 2:30, and school got out at 2:10, so I'm not catching all of it.
Mm-hmm.
So then I would try to catch it like during the summer, or like I'm sick from school, or it's a vacation day or whatever, like just to get some of them. And the thing that bothered me so much is so many of those episodes are Spider-Man against random crook, random criminal, random mafia guy.
Mm-hmm.
The rare episodes where it was a supervillain was like, it was special, was a treat. It was like when the Scooby-Doo with that Batman and Robin come on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was so much. But that, for years, and again, you and I have talked about this before, Spider-Man and the whole TV show and Adam West were it for superheroes on all of TV for damn near a generation. That was all that we had for superhero stuff on TV.
Yep.
And for me, like Adam West, you know, Adam West Batman fell in and out of syndication numerous times. Hulk wasn't on in my area at all because it already done its first run. And I mean, later we got the TV movies.
Yep.
You know, that's a whole other thing there for quality and all.
Mm-hmm.
But Spider-Man was at least fairly consistent. It might go away for a little while, but then it'd come back. And I was just so happy to have something superhero on TV. And what killed me was I'd be watching it and mom, dad, and uncle, someone else would say, oh, Spider-Man's on, and know the theme song. So all of a sudden, here's this connection, and I would be stunned. I'm like, so you know who superheroes are.
Yeah.
Like, so people know it's out there, this thing I love that seems such a niche, hidden away thing. People actually know about it. In a way, it's like what we're experiencing now with the growth of the movies and the MCU and everything. It's like, okay, so you know superheroes exist and are cool. Come hang out. Let's all talk about this and, you know, pick up some comics and enjoy it. But, you know, it's such a comforting thing to me now. You know, we all love our retro stuff and going back and finding old toys and movies and stuff like that and all. But, like, that cartoon will always make me happy. I found out Disney Plus is going to have it on there. I got to watch it. I know it's not perfect. I don't care. It's like comfort food. It's like going back to your hometown and getting the pizza you always got as a kid.
Yeah, I hear you. Excellent choice. Like, I love that 60s Spider-Man. I used to watch it on our local station. Back then it was called ITV. Now it's called Global Edmonton. But yeah, I love that version of Spider-Man cartoons. And yeah, that theme song. I loved it when they had it a little, you know, you would hear it once in a while in like the Tobey Maguire movies.
Yeah, and big time in the Marvel ones now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a great choice. Oh, yeah, and I was going to mention that the whole Disney Plus thing, I'm so looking forward to all these old series being on there. I'll go on a quick tangent here. I was at Walmart, and they were selling Darkwing Duck seasons, and they were only $5 a piece, and I was like, oh, you know, I used to love Darkwing Duck. I you know, like that was my favorite Disney afternoon show. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll... And then I was like, wait a minute. is this going to be on Disney Plus? Because, like, at this point, I'm really avoiding buying physical media. So if I can stream it on one, you know, because I get Netflix, I get Amazon Prime, I get, up in Canada, we have another streaming service called Crave TV. I have that as well. And I am planning on getting Disney Plus because of all the Marvel stuff and the Mandalorian. So I was planning on getting it anyway. So I'm looking and seeing that, you know, all these, you know, old Disney cartoons and stuff and Marvel stuff is actually going to be available on the streaming service. So I ended up not getting those DVDs because I really am getting away from physical media. So I'm super excited that Disney Plus is going to be having all these, you know, retro cartoons on their streaming service for all of us old enough to remember those cartoons.
You know, it wouldn't shock me if we do a Disney Plus thing later on.
Oh, yeah, but for sure.
I think we're about to see an explosion of generations discovering all sorts of stuff, and I can't wait for it.
Yeah,
It's going to just be fun, and I think we need a lot of fun right now.
I'm especially looking forward to seeing some of them old Mickey Mouse cartoons, like the stuff, like I remember when I was really young, we used to get the Disney Channel, like from the States.
Yeah.
We used to live in a trailer court, and it had some cable channels, so we'd get HBO every once in a while. We'd get Disney Channel, and I remember watching the old, Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, you know, even, you know, Steamboat Willie, like going back to the, you know, 40s and 50s and 20s and 30s, you know, that old Disney, like the classic Disney. I'm very interested to see what they have, you know, for that on Disney Plus. I'm excited for Disney Plus. I can't wait. All right, well, number two on my list is the theme for Dallas. Yeah, I love the Dallas theme.
I hadn't even thought of that. Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't the biggest Dallas fan when I was a kid. Like my parents would watch it, and, some, you know, if I was over at my grandma Lockhart's, she, you know, her and my aunt would be watching Dallas. You know, it was just one of those shows that, you know, was always there during my childhood, in my earlier years. And I love that theme. I love the visuals. I love, you know, how powerful it is.
The helicopter flying over everything.
Yeah.
Or I'm guessing it's a helicopter shot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's flying through Dallas, and then you see, you know, the ranchers, you know, herding the cattle, and you see, you know, like it was awesome. And it did evolve, because Dallas was on the air originally for 14 seasons, I want to say. I think it was from 78 to 92, if I remember correctly. So, like, the 70s version of the Dallas theme has a little bit more kind of funk disco influence to it a little bit. Like, you could kind of hear, you know, in some of the twangs and stuff. It very much sounds like it's a product of the 70s. And then when you listen to the theme from the 80s and into the 90s, it changed a little bit, but the core remained the same. And that goes right into the 2012 series. They, you know, TNT, I think it was TNT in the States, or maybe it was Bravo.
TNT.
Okay, it was TNT in the States, but I know in Canada it aired on Bravo up here. They had, you know, this, wasn't a reboot, but it was a continuation of the original Dallas series, where you had, like, Patrick Duffy coming back, you had JR, you know, Sue Ellen, Cliff Barnes. You had, all, you know, the old school actors, for the most part, coming back. And then you had, like, this new generation. You had, you know, JR's son, you had Bobby's son, you had, you know, them fighting over a girl who was the daughter of South Fork's nanny, or sorry, maid. But that, you know, the 2012 version was, they basically, it was the same theme, but a modern take on it, but it sounded pretty much beat for beat exactly the same. The visuals were modern, but it was fantastic. It was such a good theme. They, you know, like, it was almost exactly like the original theme. And yeah, I just absolutely love Dallas as a theme song. It's, you know, and I said, like I said, the visuals definitely help. But yeah, that's all I got to say for Dallas. All right, Kevin, number one on, well, actually, before we get to number one, let's do some honorable mentions. Kevin, what's your honorable mentions?
I was trying to not, I don't know why, for some reason, self-imposed, I was trying to not do too many cartoons. Mm-hmm. Cause like I wanted to throw in Scooby-Doo.
Nice.
Is just a fantastic one. Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, you know, DuckTales. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to, you know, I could have done a top five for just cartoon ones. I didn't pick any wrestling because very frequently wrestling will take a big song that's popular in rap or rock anyways, mm-hmm. and just adopt it for a year. Well, that's not the same as its own theme song.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. That, but I would call that a different thing. And then some just seems so easy. Don't want to like trip over either of our number ones, but some are like, you know, if you ask, you know, random coworker that doesn't seem to have any pop culture knowledge, what's best TV show? And they're going to just come up with one, go, okay, well, yeah, that's good. But that was an easy pick too. Like, did you even think for 5 minutes? So I don't want to say those in case I stumble on your number one or
Well, let's go with your number one then, and then we'll go back to the honorable mentions.
Okay. So my number one is Night Court.
Nice.
I was absolutely too young to watch Night Court when I started watching it because it was in syndication, and then it was still, there were still new episodes too. So once I realized that, I'm like, well, I have to. So I would, if it was on syndication, I watched and eventually pieced together where everything took place and, you know, the larger scheme of it. And then I was caught up for the new ones and obsessed with it. But for some reason, that theme with the sax and everything, I don't know. I've always loved it. Night Court is arguably my favorite sitcom of all time. It kills me. It's not on any streaming service in the States at all. And the DVD sets, I don't know how familiar you are with the series. So the DVD sets, season one, season two, sold so poorly, they never released the other seasons publicly.
Oh, really?
You can do the Warner Archive thing and special order from them.
Yeah.
But they never did it publicly. Yeah, because Christine Sullivan doesn't come on until season three or four, and that's when the show gets good. No one wants those first two seasons with those forgotten cast members. You want the later ones when you finally have your full cast and everyone gels and does like four or five more seasons of magic. That's what everyone wants.
Yeah.
But because the first one sold so poorly, never happened. No idea why it's not on syndication on streaming. Cause you know, like Cheers, it's Cosby. Well, Cosby's the other thing right now, but all these other classic NBC shows, it was NBC in the States that broadcast it, are available on a Netflix or Hulu or something. I don't know what studio owns it. I don't know why, but man, it should be on there. It's just, it's so New York. It's so, this is an adult show. It's just iconic. You hear it and you go, oh, I know what show's coming on instantly.
Yeah.
And there's actually someone took, what song was it? Someone took Shake Your Rump by the Beastie Boys, which is off of Paul's Boutique, and took the music out and put Night Court theme in.
Nice.
So I went nuts for it. But yeah, that, the moment you suggested this topic, that was my number one already, like the same minute.
Awesome. Yeah, like, I haven't watched Night Court since, yeah, the 90s. Like, it used to be on 5 days a week.
Yep.
On one of my channels. I didn't actually realize they had, like, different cast members, because I remember originally there was, you know, I think Bull was there from the beginning, I want to say.
Bull, Harry, and Dan are all there from the beginning.
And is Dan John Larroquette?
Yes.
Okay. And then there's the aide to the judge, the black guy,
which is Mac. Yes, but he was not the aide in the first season.
Okay.
It was a woman whose name I forget, and they're trying to have Harry Anderson,
yep,
and her as the romantic interest for the show.
Oh,
at
okay.
first, and that never clicked and never happened. And they had a different public defender, which is Marky Post later, Christine mm-hmm. Sullivan.
Yeah.
The character's name was Billy. I can't remember the actress's name. Super short blonde hair. And she just didn't, nothing against her as an actress, person, whatever, but she just wasn't gelling the same way.
Yeah.
So she got written out later. And then there were two bailiffs, older women, that both died over the course of the show, had to be replaced, and eventually they ended up with Roz, who was Marcia Warfield, I believe, was the actress's name.
Hmm.
Which then her and Bull get their banter and click going, and yep, now you have the full cast we're all familiar with, and it's a much better show, but that took until season 3 for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, because I don't... Maybe they didn't syndicate the first couple seasons, because I don't like, I remember was the one old lady, I remember her,
yep,
working with Bull.
Yep, she died. There was one that was, like, just very sarcastic and older, but then there's another mm-hmm. one that was, like, a chain smoker. That was the main difference between two, but both of them died. I don't know if they died during the season, off season, or what, but they both end up dying, and then finally they were like, well, maybe we should have a younger actress in here.
Yeah, kind of like when Coach died on Cheers.
Yes.
And then they brought in Woody Harrelson.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I it's been years since I watched Night Court, but I totally, yeah, I love Night Court. It was, like, where I grew up, we didn't get, like, cartoons after school. We got sitcoms. So I grew up watching, like, Night Court, Cheers, Golden Girls, Empty Nest, those kind of sitcoms, right? After school. But, yeah, great choice. That is a good theme. For my number one, I'm also going to the 80s, and I don't think this is any surprise. It's the Magnum P.I. theme. I love the Magnum P.I. theme. I love it so much that we use it for our Ender segment. I've used it at yep. the beginning of some of our episodes. I love it. I love the. It's not just the music. I love the visuals. I love seeing Tom Selleck driving off in the car. You got the helicopter. You got the action sequences. It's just a great theme, and yeah, that's why it is my number one. All right, so let's get to our honorable mentions. So go ahead, Kevin, and continue your list of honorable mentions.
Cheers, but I think it's such a simple one to go for.
Yeah.
I think it's such an easy shot to go for Cheers. I agree if anyone wants to pick it, but I also think it's easy. Drew Carey Show with Cleveland Rocks.
Oh, yes.
It's a fun one.
Yep.
So I think Drew Carey Show, also not available on any streaming service in the States.
Hmm.
And the rumor is because... did you watch it when it was on?
Or when
it was, like, early?
I syndicated
a little bit.
I did watch it in the beginning. I did watch through the Cleveland Rocks era. I basically dropped off, I want to say, when... I can't remember the character... Basically, when Drew ended up with the chick on the show,
Kate.
Yeah, that's when I kind of I kind of dropped off.
There was enough humor that was risque, kind of pushing it a little bit, certain jokes.
Mm-hmm.
So the current rumor, and I mean, I don't have a connection, but the current rumor is because of Drew Carey hosting The Price is Right now, he doesn't want the show out there and ruin that image.
I could see that.
Which I could see. Yeah. I think it's leaving money on the table. I think it's different audiences, but I certainly understand it.
It was definitely risque in some, because there was that episode that they based on the Full Monty.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, for the time, that was definitely risque for network television. That's for sure. Oh, and what? And it was on ABC, wasn't it?
It was, which is the family one. Which, you know, is ABC, because they're owned by Disney, is considered more family friendly shows usually.
Yeah, yeah. And was it owned by Disney back then? I can't even remember.
I don't know. I've been trying to find out when it happened, because it seems like it was more of a part ownership, kind of like Disney owned Miramax, but they didn't really touch it. It was just in their umbrella.
Yeah.
For a while, Touchstone Pictures, you know, there's stuff that they own, but it was just there. They weren't hands on with it. Mm-hmm. But then there was absolutely a turn, because Wonderful World of Disney goes back to ABC too, but they didn't own it yet.
Mm-hmm. That is true. Yeah.
You know, there's got to be something where, you know, if you're a stockholder or certain court records, it's like, okay, you guys actually owned it a lot longer than you publicly said.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's probably one of those scenarios. It's in portfolio, but all of a sudden some new owner comes in and wants to make changes.
Yeah.
Sorry, just another honorable mention off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. I was honestly surprised neither of us went with Twilight Zone.
That is actually on my list of honorable mentions, but yeah. No,
okay.
I'm staggering here. I don't remember what the 80s theme was.
I don't have a clue for that one. I'm just thinking the classic one.
Yeah, the 60s, the Rod Serling. One thing I will... Have you seen the new Twilight Zone with Jordan Peele hosting?
No. Alright, so actually I was thinking about this earlier today. One, I just haven't, because I'm not going to subscribe to another thing, and there's not enough on CBS for me to shell out the money for it yet. But two, everyone talked about the first two episodes, and I've heard crickets since then. So I was actually curious if it went downhill, if people just weren't talking about it, if, you know, I was thinking about that earlier today.
Honestly, I really enjoyed them. I thought they did an excellent job. I mean, it's an updated version of, obviously, it's an hour long version. But I think Jordan Peele does an excellent job in the Rod Serling capacity. And speaking of themes, their opening theme is very reminiscent of the original Twilight Zone opening. A little bit of a modern take, like as far as the music goes. Obviously, visually, it's a modern take, but the closing credits, like this is, I don't, because I remember watching the Twilight Zone when it came back on UPN in the early 2000s, and I know I watched the 80s version, but I can't remember what the theme was like or anything, but the closing credits for the new Twilight Zone theme is the exact same music that they used in the original Twilight Zone credits, like the closing credits, the exact same music. And I love it, you know, that they're paying homage to the original series by including that music at the end of the episode for their closing credits. But no, I recommend it. Like in Canada, it airs on one of our networks called City TV.
And I love City TV.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I missed like the first four episodes, I want to say. And City TV has its own, using air quotes, free streaming service. So I sign on to it, and I sign on with my provider to get this free streaming service so I can watch the Twilight Zone episodes. And it won't let me watch it because of my service provider. Because I don't know if they have a deal with these guys or what's going on. But based on my service provider, I'm not allowed to watch those episodes. So I think they've done 10. So I've seen 6 of them, but I missed the first like 4. So now I'm kind of debating if I should just go on iTunes and pay the, you know, $2 or $3 an episode just to watch them. Which I think I'm going to, because like I said, I really enjoyed the first, you know, or the last 6 episodes. I thought, you know, like some were not as good as others, but in my view, it's right. Like, I don't know if you watch Black Mirror, but I think it's the quality and the storytelling is right on par with Black Mirror, I think. You know, and because it's through the CBS streaming service, they can, you know, do a little bit more that they couldn't do. I think with if it had been on CBS, for example.
Yeah, because I mean, like, even your 10 o'clock rules have been relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
They can get away with more than they could have, you know, not that long ago. But there's still, it's still CBS. Mm-hmm. It's still network. There's still the risk there could be kids awake. Cable's thrown out the windows past like 9 or 10. They can do whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's CBS is still considered like the older person's network in the States, which is ridiculous, but still has that,
yeah, that
thing
stigma
attached to it. Yeah.
So do you have any other honorable mentions you want to throw out there before I start rifling mine off?
Just a quick one. I'm actually like, I don't know what, why it got in my head as we were talking, but the, I don't know if dichotomy is the right word, but I'm going to go with it. The dichotomy between Batman Animated Series and Superman Animated Series openers.
Hmm.
Just how they're both, hey, here's our hero, stuff happens, bad guys, boom, boom. Our hero rises up against them, and we have this, you know, building music to the crescendo, and then here comes the episode.
Mm-hmm.
For the Batman one, all the music implies darkness, and the Superman one, all the music implies light, even though it's the same story in the music.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why it just came, something inspired us came to my head, and it might be because I just bought that Batman Superman World's Finest animated movie.
Nice.
The other day.
Yeah.
I found it for $1. I thought, all right, this is going to be worth having.
Yeah. All right. Well, for my honorable mentions, I have a couple of Canadian stuff that I don't know if you'll be familiar with, Kev. There was a TV series called North of 60 on CBC. Great theme song. If you haven't heard it before, it's on YouTube, I'm sure. I love the North of 60 theme. That series takes place in the Northwest Territories, but was actually filmed in Alberta. It was actually filmed near Calgary, at a little place called Bragg Creek. Even though it's set in the Northwest Territories, it was filmed in Alberta. It was required viewing when I was growing up. North of 60 on CBC. Another CBC series, this was a cartoon. I think it might have been on the Disney Channel in the States. I'm not sure. It's called The Raccoons.
As soon as you said cartoon, I knew it was going to be raccoons.
You've seen it?
Yeah, because I grew up close to Canada, so I actually saw it on CBC.
Oh, okay, excellent.
It's so underrated.
Oh, yeah, like the theme uses, I can't remember the name of the song or the artist, but it's an actual song that they use for this theme, and the song is actually really good. If you're listening to this podcast, The Raccoons, check out the theme song on YouTube, and then check out the actual song. I really like it. It's a fantastic song. Another show that I watched for years, 5 nights a week, and I just recently bought the entire series on DVD just before Christmas last year, and that's MASH. I love the MASH theme. Honestly, it's one of my favorite TV series of all time, but the theme song, I love it. Again, another required viewing growing up, the Flintstones, the original Hanna-Barbera 60s mm-hmm. Flintstones. Flintstones, Meet the Flintstones, that one. Going back to the 90s, or late 80s, early 90s, Twin Peaks. The theme for David Lynch's television masterpiece. It's simple, it's haunting, it's fantastic. Another honorable mention, The X-Files.
As soon as you said Twin Peaks, I was like, if he doesn't say X-Files, I'm gonna.
Both series had David Duchovny. Twin Peaks had David Duchovny as a cross-dressing FBI agent. The X-Files had David Duchovny as a sunflower seed eating agent. both great series, both great themes. And I'm going to end with two modern TV series. First up, Mad Men from AMC. A simple theme. The visuals, the animated visuals are amazing. Definitely check that out. And last but not least, it is the theme song, or the opening theme for this year's Emmy Award winning Best Drama, and that is Game of Thrones. Aside from the music, the visuals of the theme are amazing. The 3D animated, where you see where it goes over the map and you're seeing the different locales. And one thing, if you watch Game of Thrones on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever, and you don't watch it live or whatever, you may not realize that every episode, the theme may not be the same as the episode before, visually, in that, as the story
changes, the map is relevant to where they are in that episode, right?
Yes, exactly. Not necessarily that episode, but that
arc.
So you'll see it will change. So they will change locations from time to time, and certain areas you won't see, or certain areas will change. Like, for example, like Winterfell. In the first two seasons, you saw the Stark logo, and it was the trees were good and everything was good. And then the third season, because in the season two finale, as we later found out, the Boltons betrayed the Starks, and they basically torched Winterfell. So when they show Winterfell on the map in season three, it's a ruin. It's smoke. Things are burnt down. So they changed it visually. And then later, when the Boltons took over Winterfell and actually moved there, the Stark sigil was gone, and you had the Bolton sigil during the opening theme for Winterfell. It's little changes like that change from episode to episode, and that's one of the neat things about watching Game of Thrones, especially this last season. When the first few episodes, you see the dead marching towards Winterfell, and every episode up until the Battle of Winterfell, you saw the advancement of the army of the dead on the opening theme. So yeah, it's little tidbits like that made watching Game of Thrones one of the awesome experiences that it was. But all right, well, I think that is the end of our main topic. So before we move to our ender segment, we're going to play that little game of where can we find you on the internet. And Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
So right now you can find me, my Twitter, a Facebook page you can like, my Instagram, and my blog are all now rebranded as Masked Ephemera. Celebrating all the, kind of get the idea of ephemera from Stanley's Excelsior, and taking stuff that most people would throw away the magazines, the tapes, you know, the old books, stuff like that, that people are getting rid of, that we geeks like digging through and rediscovering. And you'll know that you found it when you see the picture of a VHS tape with a mask on it.
Excellent. Well, for myself, you can check out, I do a blog. It's called Random Nerdness. You can check it out at www.randomnerdness.blogspot.com. My regular co-host, Jason, who couldn't be here this evening, he also does a blog. It's called Nerdy Life of Mine. So if you go to www.nerdylifeofmine.com, you can check out Jason Roberts' blog there. I'm also on iTunes. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as ChrisLock1701. So yeah, and be sure to check out the Pop Culture Pub group on Facebook. Just send a request, and I will approve you to join our growing group on Facebook. I also am an admin of the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk. It's a group on Facebook because I am a huge fan of the Incredible Hulk. So be sure to check that out as well. And please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or at podbean.com. So on behalf of myself and Mr. Kevin Deason, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to our main topic. But that's not the end of the episode. We're going to move into our end of the episode segment that we call Enders. Normally, what I do, dear listener, is I let Kevin know what I'm going to be discussing on the Ender segment, and I just realized I didn't do that this time. So Kevin doesn't actually know what I'm going to be talking about, but I'm sure he'll have something to say. Okay. I got four different things I was going to bring up. First up, and this was not on any of our favorite themes. And that was Friends, the sitcom Friends. I'll Be There For You kind of get, it's not the worst theme song, but it definitely annoys a little bit.
It's iconic. It's well known.
It is.
But it's not, you know, like one I'm going to get excited when I hear now.
Yeah. But the reason why I'm bringing it up for Enders, and I don't know if this is a coincidence or what's going on. This summer, there was one Sunday. This was, I want to say like a month and a half ago, where it was like really raining and it was crappy out. And I don't know. We were just flipping through the channels and Friends was playing. And I got watching some classic episodes and it kind of like I've always enjoyed Friends. When it aired, it was one of my favorite sitcoms to watch, and I pretty much watched it for basically when it started syndication. I want to say in like 97, that's when I started watching it. And then I watched it pretty much till the end, till 2004. And of course, I rewatched the, you know, first 3 or 4 years because they were airing them 5 days a week. So I got caught up pretty quickly. But it had been a few years, basically since 2004. I don't think I've watched an episode of Friends since 2004. But I've heard people, you know, especially a lot of millennials that didn't watch it when it originally aired, watching Friends on Netflix. So I actually binged watched, you know, for the last month or so, basically the last 6 seasons of Friends. And I forgot how much I really liked this show. I mean, there were some bad episodes, but for the most part, it was very entertaining. You know, like, as an ensemble cast, you know, I thought they were all brought something to the table. They all were funny in their own way. But the reason why I'm bringing this up for our Ender segment is this fall is the 25th anniversary of Friends. For starters, number one, I can't believe it's been 25 years since it started. That, to me, that seems crazy that it's been that long, a quarter of a century. But also, Google did this neat thing recently where if you take one of the characters' names, like, say, Ross from Friends, you type that into Google search, like his information will come up like normal, like on a Google search, but then there'll be like an icon. And for Ross, there was a couch. So if you click on that icon, it actually tilts his information at an angle, and then you get his iconic line from the, you know, I think is probably one of the funniest episodes that they ever did, was when they were when Ross bought this couch.
Giant, yeah.
Yeah, this giant couch, and he got Chandler and Rachel to help him, because he didn't want to pay to have it moved, because it was going to cost like $99 or something for him to get the movers to move it, and he was cheap and he wanted to save $99. So it got his friends to try and help him move it up the stairs, and they, you know, that famous line, pivot, and you actually hear that line when you click on the couch. So I thought that was kind of a neat thing that Google did. Kevin, what's your recollections of Friends? Did you watch it when it was out originally?
I can't remember if I watched it from day one, but probably close. And that was still Thursday night NBC, so Friends, mm-hmm. whatever, at 8:30, you know, that they just dumped there to get ratings, Seinfeld.
I think originally Friends was on Tuesdays, like when it first, like the first few years. And then I want to say when Seinfeld signed off in 98, I think that's when they moved Friends to like the 8 p.m. slot, if I remember correctly, and then Frasier took the 7 p.m. slot from Seinfeld. And then eventually Friends became like the main show, like Friends, you know, surpassed
Thursday
Frasier.
Was the block for a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can't remember if I did it right away or if I got into it later. There's a lot I liked. There's a lot I liked when I was watching it. There's some stuff that still pops up now because my younger cousins discovered it and marathoned it a couple years ago. So there's certain things, but it's also very much becoming a time capsule. And there's some stuff that just doesn't play anymore, some stuff that is odd, some stuff we can look at now and go, okay, this is a little weird. Mm-hmm. But there's always still enjoyable stuff. It's funny to watch stuff now and see how things change. Like, here's six nobodies at first, then no one knew. All of a sudden, they realize that Jennifer Aniston's becoming the biggest star on TV, and a lot changes around that. But little things where clearly they had no faith in the actress. Hey, we don't think people are going to laugh at this or that. So, Ross, you have a monkey.
There's
no good reason for that. It's such a padding. Oh, hey, his wife left him for another woman. She's a lesbian. That's scandalous and new and different. And 25 years later, we're like, yeah, that's whatever. No one cares anymore. But there's a lot of little things like that at the start of the show.
Yeah, the chick and the duck. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the chicken, jeez. But I will say I think the best episode, my favorite, and one I'd honestly put, if I did, like, these are what I think are the greatest episodes of all of TV I've ever watched in my life, the who knows who best little quiz game thing where they bet the apartment.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I could watch that now. And yeah. I've probably watched it 100 times. That is one of the funniest, most well-written, rapid-fire, so much going on, every character fully explained episodes of a show I've ever seen. And I think it still holds up today.
Yep, absolutely.
That episode is just, like, you could put that on stage as it is, and people would go see it.
That...
I kind of half debating watching it after this.
Yeah, that episode, also one of my favorite, aside from the couch episode, was the one where, Chandler and Monica had the secret relationship going on, and then only Joey knew about it, and then Phoebe and Rachel find out about it, and then they decide they're going to mess with...
But they don't know who knows.
Yeah.
Yup.
And they don't know that we know that they know we know, you know, like, and they're going back and forth, like, and Phoebe's trying to seduce Chandler, and then Chandler's trying to pretend like he's into it, and yeah, that episode makes me laugh.
There were two DVDs years and years ago when, you know, the show was fresh.
Yeah.
And each DVD had 5 episodes on it. It was The Best of Friends, Volume 1, Volume 2. And somewhere along the way, I got rid of them. I wish I had that. Because when Friends goes off at Netflix next year and all that, I'm like, mm-hmm. Yeah, these are probably the 10 best episodes they made. It'd be nice to just revisit those. The big Thanksgiving episode is on there. What's the one where Joey comes back in the room wearing all of Chandler's clothes?
Oh, that's when they were going to that... where Ross had, like, an award or something.
Yeah, and they were all dressing that up. That one's on there. Yeah. So, like, the ones they picked, I had to agree with them. Like, yeah, I think these are the best episodes the show made, and I don't know where I lost those DVDs over time.
There was the one episode, and I love how some things were not scripted. Like, they just went with it. There was the one where Ross is learning how to play, or he's trying to learn to play the bagpipes for Chandler and Monica's wedding, and the episode ends with him playing for them, and then they show everyone's reactions on the couch, so, and then they get to Jennifer Aniston, and you can see she's actually starting to lose it. Like, she's, like, using, she's putting her hand over her nose and mouth, just because she's actually laughing. And she's trying to, like, not laugh. And then Lisa Kudrow starts, like, singing along with the bagpipes. And then Jennifer Aniston just loses it. Like, it's so funny to see. But, yeah, like, this really was a good series. And I did watch Joey, like, the spinoff series when it came out. But it was never even close to being as good.
Wasn't the same thing. Yeah.
No, because, like, they kind of made Joey a goof in that show.
He didn't have, like, a huge character development, but he got better, we'll say, over the course of Friends. But then they just dumbed him right back down for Joey.
Yeah, because one of the things that he was good with in Friends was women. Like, he always got women. Like, he was a confident guy. You know, how you doing, like, that whole thing. And then when Joey came around, it's like he couldn't talk to women all of a sudden. Like, they were writing him like he had no clue how to get women. And it was a complete... It was a disservice to the character. It really was.
I would even say the last couple of years of Friends, you could have had Joey spin off. Like, he was showing on Friends, hey, I can't be good for myself, but I can be a good dad.
Yeah.
I'm a mess, but I could be there for someone else. They could have done something with that for Joey. No.
Yeah. Like, one of the things I will say, like, watching it, you know, doing the binge watch, you know, going down the order to the last episode, it went, like you said, like, you know, they do, in the beginning, they do the gimmicky thing where Ross has a monkey, and then there's the chick and the duck with Joey and Chandler, and there's all these, you know, goofy things. But then, towards the end, like, after it got popular, like, it was getting kind of kind of nauseating, in a way, annoying, I guess is the best way to say it, of, like, all these big guest stars. You know, like, once it became popular, like, then Sean Penn has to do an episode. Then, because Brad Pitt's dating Jennifer Aniston at the time, or married to her, I can't remember, he's got to be on an episode. Christina Applegate's got to be, you know, Rachel's sister. Reese Witherspoon has to be Rachel's other sister. What's her name? Denise Richards has to be Monica's hot cousin. You know, it got a little old. You know, like, one of the charming things about Friends in the beginning was that these were all, except for Courtney Cox, new actors. You know, like, people that we didn't really know. And then they got famous. And then all of a sudden, all these other famous people wanted to play.
Well, and a special appearance, when it's special and rare, works. George Clooney and Noah Wiley on the episode is a good episode, because they weren't doing it all the time yet.
Yeah.
But when every episode's a special episode, then no episodes are a special episode.
Yeah, it just kind of took away. Like, I think there could have been a, you know, like, maybe a comedic actor that could have done that, you know, these roles better, but they did. They went with, you know, Sean Penn or whatever. But that was my only gripe, is it got a little too, you know, like, you know, who's who in Hollywood had to be on the Friends episode. Funny thing, one of the last episodes I watched, you know, one of the final episodes that they did, Brent Spiner was actually on it, Data from Star Trek Next Generation, which I totally didn't remember him being on an episode of Friends, but he was there.
Also on a couple episodes of Night Court.
Yes, he was the hillbilly guy.
Yep.
Yep. Yeah. Great. There's something else I was going to mention about Friends. I just had a brain fart. I can't think of what I was going to say. It's interesting that, it's 25 years. I can't believe it's been that long. You know, it's kind of, I know that with all the, you know, the TV series coming back, like the Roseanne show, and which is now the Conners, Murphy Brown came back, and so on and so forth. I'd be kind of interested if they did a Friends reunion show.
I think money wise, where everyone is in their careers, I don't think you could do a season. I think you could do 6 episode miniseries, TV movie, real movie, theater movie of an update. But I don't think you're getting a full season out of any of them.
Yeah.
Now. I think there's too many other commitments and money.
That is true. What I was going to mention, Courtney Cox. I remember her prior to Friends because she was on the Masters of the Universe movie.
Yeah.
I remember as a little kid seeing her on that movie, falling in love with her. And then when she was on Friends, like that, like every time I saw her for the first, I don't know, first few years I watched it, I always thought of her as being from Masters of the Universe. It's definitely worth a rewatch. The next thing on my Ender's list is at the time of this recording, the last Sunday, was the 2019 Emmy Awards. And Game of Thrones won for Best Drama. And also Peter Dinklage won for Best Supporting Actor. And those are really the only ones I remember, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I was pretty, even though the last season of Game of Thrones wasn't the greatest, I think there was a lot of missed opportunities, especially in the last couple seasons of Game of Thrones. I know we've discussed this before on the show. I'm glad that they got their due. I'm glad that they got, you know, because just, you know, whatever people may say about the final season, whether you liked it or you didn't like it, you know, the fact that they concluded that series and, you know, defied a lot of people. I think that's why people are upset, is because people expected it to go a certain way and they defied most people's expectations by going a different way than most people thought. And that's why they're upset. But for me, you know, I'm happy that they won because, yeah, it was a great show.
I think Game of Thrones is also, of course, it was going to win in its last year because now it's gone. But it's got to be the biggest risk in TV history.
Mm-hmm.
Money sets, what it's about, who's on it, everything. Which, even what channel it's on. Like, that's got to... On paper, if you just said, here's what we're going to do, we're going to take a fantasy series, it's going to be on a pay channel, it's going to cost a fortune, we're going to have Peter Dinklage as the main star of it, there's going to be lots of sex and violence, you said there's not a chance in hell this is successful. Based on everything previous, there's not a chance this is going to work. And the fact that it became a phenomenon, they got to get an award just to credit that.
Well, and it's funny because I know George R. R. Martin was quoted as saying, like, his book series as being unfilmable. So the fact that they did what they did, it you know, was impressive in of itself. But, you know, I really do think that one of the reason why the last two seasons, you know, aside from going away from the books, why it didn't do as well, as I do think there was money and budgetary issues and contract issues. I think, you know, it just, they had to write things a certain way, film things a certain way, do things a certain way, because they were limited in one way or another, either financially or, you know, contract-wise, you know, filming opportunity-wise, like, you know, they may have had, you know, okay, we got to do this now, because they had certain windows of, you know, weather-wise that they, you know, like, there's so many, the show has so many variables to it, because, you know, a lot of it's filmed outside, like, it's filmed on location, it's not filmed on a soundstage like, you know, say Spartacus or something like that, where it's all green screen. You know, this is them actually out in Ireland. This is them actually out in Spain. You know, like, this is them in a desert. You know, like, they, and I think they actually filmed some parts in Canada as well. A lot of location shooting, a lot of logistical nightmares. And I think it did ultimately affect the show. I really do. I think that's one of the reasons why, you know, they made the choices that they did. But at the end of the day, you know, I say this to all the critics out there of the show, you know, all the people that, you know, bashed it in its final season, I invite you to make a better show. You know, like, yeah. if you can do a better show than you know, D.B. Weiss and David Benioff could do, then please do it, because I would watch it. If you can do better than they can, please do it. But, of course, you know, very few can do that. You know, it's way easier to be a, you know, armchair quarterback than it is to actually be a quarterback. But, Kevin, what were your thoughts on the Emmys? Did you watch it at all? Was there any surprises for you that...
I was surprised Bob Newhart was still alive.
And they didn't have a host this year. They went hostless.
Because who had to drop out last minute when they got in trouble and they went hostless? Was it Kevin Hart for the Oscars or something?
Yeah, I think so. Something about that. Yeah, I think so.
A good host is memorable. I can't remember. No, I can. Neil Patrick Harris did good hosting jobs. Mm-hmm. For Emmys, Hugh Jackman did Tonys. Geez, when we were younger, Billy Crystal did what, like 5 Oscars in a row or something?
Yep.
That was insane. That Whoopi Goldberg went from him, which made sense for the whole comic relief tie-in and all.
Yep.
So you can have a good host, but in recent memory, no one's done anything special. You're just like, all right, there's a host. You come out, you tell some terrible jokes, and really you're just wasting time that could be giving out awards, so then we don't have the Earlier This Evening award, and it's the one you actually wanted to see.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Game of Thrones I have respect for, but I'm not a huge fan. And that was the only, I'll say, genre thing up for a lot of awards. Everything else, I'm like, this just isn't my year. These aren't my shows. These aren't my actors or actresses. You know, I don't have anything I'm excited and rooting for here, so I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't worth watching the time when I wasn't excited for any possibilities this year. I've had years where I'm like, I need to watch at least till this award, but just nothing this year. This year for the Oscars too, there wasn't anything I was excited for.
I was kind of like you. Like, I kind of just tuned in because there was nothing else on TV at the time. And I wasn't particularly rooting for Game of Thrones, but I was happy that they won. Like, I'm always happy when, you know, fantasy or science fiction genre, you know, TV series or film does well in the Emmys or the Oscars. And yeah, like Peter Dinklage, I'm, you know, really happy that he won. He, you know, was excellent as Tyrion Lannister. But honestly, some of the ones they were up against, like the guy who won, I want to say Best Actor in a Drama, I have no idea what show that guy's on. He's the guy that had like the really crazy hat. Like, he had like this, yeah, like this really weird hat that I'm assuming must have came from England or something. It's something like the Queen would wear, or Guinan off Star Trek.
I don't have a clue. I know what you're talking about now, but yeah, I don't have a clue.
Like, I have no idea what show that guy was on or what that show was. I'm not saying it's not good, but yeah, I had no clue. Like this year there was actors and shows up there, and I was really scratching my head thinking to myself, I have no idea what's going on here. I don't know who these people are. But anyway, we'll move to my last ender for the evening, and that is the Joker movie, which at the time of this recording has not been released. I believe it's October 4th when it actually comes out. But it's already got a lot of controversy, and I'm really wondering what people are thinking. So my thoughts of this Joker movie, I really get, this is, again, my personal opinion, I'm tired of these non-Batman properties, you know, like the Gotham TV show. You know, you're going to do a show where you have the Penguin, you have the Joker, you got Commissioner Gordon, you got everyone else. You got Bruce Wayne as a kid, you got Alfred, but no Batman. You got a Batman show without Batman. Like, to me, I just don't understand why. Just do a Batman show. Pennyworth, same thing. I'm not even going to try and watch that show because I really don't care about Alfred as a young man, as a secret agent or whatever he was. You know, give me a Batman show. And like with the Joker movie, I really don't care to see the Joker on his own. Like, to me, what makes Joker interesting is seeing him and Batman play off each other, to see that, you know, that rivalry. But that being said, I'm not saying that I'm not going to see this movie. I don't think I'll go to the theater to watch it, but I'll probably watch it when it comes out on a streaming service, whichever one picks it up. I'll probably watch it then, unless people are, you know, word of mouth, you know, if I got friends and family members that are telling me, you got to go see this, it's so good, I might go see it then. Because Joaquin Phoenix, I think, is a good actor. I think he, you know, will do just fine as the Joker. But it's kind of like the Venom movie. Like, I still have not watched the Venom movie because I really don't care about watching a movie about Venom if there's no Spider-Man in it. You know, you need, like, a solo Venom movie just does not pique my interest. Spider-Man movie with Venom in it, sure, I'll go see that. But just a standalone Venom movie, like, it just doesn't pique my interest. And same with Joker. And I know, like, this movie's rated R, and it's supposed to be, you know, very well acted and so on and so forth. But now there's controversy. You know, people are, you know, apparently the victims of, because in 2012, when The Dark Knight Rises came out, there was that unfortunate shooting at the theater.
Oh, Colorado. I was already living here. Yeah, 2012 sounds about right.
Yeah, because apparently, like, the article that I'm looking at right now, the headline reads, Batman shooting victim's family horrified by Joker film's violence. And another headline I'm reading, U.S. military issues warning to troops about incel violence at Joker screenings. Now, like, I don't know what people were expecting. Like, this is an R-rated movie about a psychopath. You know, there's going to be violence. And I really don't think, you know, like the whole shooting thing that took place in 2012, I mean, that, it was tragic, and it's sad that it happened, but I really don't see how it has any bearing on this Joker movie. I really don't, there's probably just as much violence in the Deadpool movies than,
true,
you know, there's probably just as much violence in the rated R Logan movie that they did a couple of years ago.
I don't think it's the violence. I think the violence is what is being said. Now, I'm making some leaps here. I'm not making exact examples, but still make an overall point.
Yeah.
Charles Manson never actually killed someone. He spoke to people and manipulated and convinced and hyped up and rattled and all, and got people to do his bidding. But he never actually killed someone. So the precedent, I'll even take it to extreme. Hitler probably never killed anyone, but he got everyone rattled up and got everyone behind him and got people to do his bidding. Now, that's a much bigger leap, yes. But point is, you can have your words, your actions, influence people to do terrible things. You just take Fight Club, for example, for just a movie. Fight Club, the book or the movie, is making a bigger point about consumerism, about toxic masculinity, about so many things. And most of us who have read the book and watched the movie get it. And we're like, wow, what an expose on male psyche. This is amazing. But there's certain people that read it. Well, they probably didn't read it. They probably just watched the movie and they're like, yeah, we need to blow shit up. Take the world back from them. Who is them? I don't know. Pick someone. but they have completely skewed the point of this Paul Holmick's story.
Yeah.
And use it to excuse their actions. The Joker movie, hey, I just had a bad day. And they, pick your they or them, pick your scapegoat, are trying to take it away from me and take this away from me. So, of course, my only reaction is violence. Can't you agree? Can't you understand? Didn't you have a bad day, too?
Yeah.
And you're going to give someone who's already mentally unstable, someone who already has issues, a totem, an icon, an avatar, a god to worship and say, yes, the Joker's telling me this is okay. I had a bad day, too. My boss doesn't appreciate me. My wife doesn't appreciate me. Society sucks. The Joker felt better by killing people. Maybe I should too.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the problem. Yeah, Deadpool's probably more violent. Yeah, you know, slasher horror movie's probably more violent. It's not the violence. It's going to be, here's your excuse for a horrible act. And they're going to take it and they're going to run with it. And it's going to happen. I am damn sure. I would even warn people, I'm not seeing this in a theater. To go back to the Colorado, I am not seeing this movie in theater. Something's going to happen. I truly feel it. I feel someone's going to use this movie as an excuse to do something bad. No way in hell am I seeing it in public. I almost don't even, like, I am all for the artist should get paid. You know, even in just our little blog and circle and podcast and all, we know creative people that are like, hey, a bunch of people downloaded my work and I didn't get paid, and it would have been nice because I could have paid like my rent if those people had actually bought my book or my album or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I would like to see this movie eventually because of my comic history. I don't want to spend money on it. I don't want to give Warner DC any money for this. Yeah, I understand, hey, we wrote the script, Joaquin's a great actor, everyone wants to do their version of Joker, just like they're doing their version of Shakespeare at this point.
Yeah.
Read the room. This was not the right time to do it. Movies have sat on a shelf before. Hey, we had a big couple days in the United States, some stuff might be happening right now. Maybe a movie like this would be better in 2 years when we're all a little calmer and not trying to blame each other and point guns, literally.
Yeah.
Like, it might be a real good movie sitting on the shelf right now.
Yeah, I'm glad that I have you on tonight's episode. Because what you've just said, like, I honestly didn't think of it that way. Like, in regards to, you know, people with mental health issues using this as an excuse. To me, the way I was reading this was, it was kind of like the, you know, the Frederick Wortham stuff, you know, where, you know, they were blaming comic books for, you know, juvenile delinquency. But, you know, so I was like, oh, they're, you know, people are just blaming, you know, the Joker and the Batman movies and, you know, for people, you know, doing bad things and, you know, making poor choices and being violent. But what you just said about, you know, people with, you know, mental health issues, I never really thought of it that way. But yeah, I definitely agree with you. Like, I totally see your perspective here. You know, and especially with, like what you said with all the violence going on in the States right now. You know, where I forget what the number was, but it was crazy, the number of shootings that have happened this year. You know, we really should maybe shy away from the, you know, the violence right now.
Yeah, I think a movie like, it's the wrong time right now for something like this. And we've had, you know, hey, this act happened, you know, usually mass shooting. Maybe this movie, this album, this TV show, this episode, whatever, maybe we don't play it for a little while. Maybe we sit on it for a year or two. We've done it before. It's not a big deal. Everyone will still get paid in the end.
Yep.
My hope, based on the trailer, because, again, neither of us have seen the whole movie. Only a couple people have.
Yep.
That trailer absolutely feels like Joker's about to kill all the audience. Like in Killing Joke.
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely, it feels like it, that's the beat that's about to happen. And I think that could save it from my worries. The Joker's like, oh yeah, I'm going to kill all the audience tonight. And he does, and it's like, he's not an empathetic character. He is a flat-out psychotic madman, murderous criminal. Do not worship him. Look what he just did.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe no one takes these things out of, away from the movie then. They're like, oh yeah, he's a messed up dude. That was horrible. I hope Batman stops him. Then maybe that could rescue it. Again, neither of us have seen the whole movie. We don't know.
Yeah.
But if they don't have some tipping point of he went too far, please do not look up to this character, I think we're sunk and something bad's going to come of it.
Well, that's why you need a Batman character in this movie. You need that counterbalance. You need to have that, you know, Dark Knight to show that what the Joker's doing is wrong. And he's not, you know, that he is not the hero of this film. And that, to me, that, you know, just aside from the violence and all that to begin with, I think that's, you know, the ultimate mistake of this film is that, it is just my personal opinion as a comic book fan, I don't want to read a comic book just about the Joker. I want to read a comic book about Batman fighting the Joker. You know, this film, I really don't think we need a Joker movie. Like, you need Batman to play, you need him playing off a good character. And, I think it's just a mistake. Like, whereas the Venom movie, I haven't seen it. But from what I understand, he's kind of like the anti-hero Venom, like the
he is. It's Venom. Venom's a fine monster, alien, you know, violent, over the top movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even throw it into like same vein as Predator, practically. You know, it's an R, but it's almost like an over-the-top R because of the sci-fi nature of it and all, too.
Yeah.
You know, some anti-hero stuff going on. I would equate it Predator. If they called Venom something else and you didn't have the Venom expectations, well, it's a Marvel character. It should be tied to Spider-Man. No, none of that. All right, well, then call it something different.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the symbiote from Planet X. I don't know. Call it something else.
Yep.
Throw that out there. The movie's fine. The movie's, if you don't think of Venom and what he should be and where the symbiote should have come from, if you just take it as this is just Elvira, Svengoolie, someone's just playing that as their Monster of the Week movie, it's fun. When you try to work into Spider-Man and Marvel, it falls apart.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, and you're right. We've seen, you know, what happens when Batman's not around. And it just doesn't work that well. This Joker one, it needs Batman. Heath Ledger's a very violent and charismatic Joker. But you got Batman on there. Shit. Dark Knight Rises doesn't have a Batman. It's got some guy. He does a heroic act. But that's not Batman.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's why that's the weakest one of that trilogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agreed. Like, honestly, Joker, I think, works best when he has that mystery about him, where you don't know his origin. You know, I really think one of the reasons why he worked so well in The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger was that you didn't know where he came from. Like, he told two different versions of how he got the scar on his face. So which is true? Or is neither of them true? You know, like, I like that mystery about the Joker, where you don't know where he comes from. And even like the Michael Keaton 89 version of the Joker. Like, that was a good version too, even though you saw him, you know, fall in the vat and, you know, and all that, and
yeah, Red Hood and all that.
Yeah, his origin was tied in with Batman for that film. I was okay with that, because yeah, like, he had Batman to play off of. But I just honestly, just from like a comic book standpoint as a fan, I just think it's a mistake making a movie about the Joker. Like, what's next? We're going to get a Lex Luthor movie where there's no Superman. It's just Lex Luthor doing evil stuff.
Well, and you need your villain to be charismatic again to a point. Mm-hmm. You need them to be an interesting character in the movie to a point. Heath Ledger, Joker, Killmonger, Thanos. They're like, and Marvel's been very good with it. Mm-hmm. Hey, Killmonger. Killmonger's a great one. Jeez, I'm with you to a point. You are making an excellent case and an excellent argument, and then you've gone too far.
Yep.
Now you've truly come around to be the villain. But you're with them. It's more interesting one. It's Paradise Lost. Hey, I was with you up until a point.
Yep.
And now I understand why you're the bad guy, and now we need our good guy to come in.
Yep.
And Joker doesn't have that. And I like the idea of multiple interpretations of Joker. I think of Joker as the low-key trickster god of DC.
Yep.
He changes form, he changes, you know, who he's attached to, he does this, he does that. Maybe there's never been, you know, because DC's kind of going this way, but they haven't officially said it yet. Maybe it's because of Doomsday Clock. I don't know. DC's kind of a mess. But I don't think there's one true Joker. Bruce Wayne is Batman, you know, other than random side things that happen, like Dick Grayson or Azrael or whatever. But yeah, for the most part, Bruce Wayne's Batman, Clark Kent, Superman. I don't think there's... This guy is Joker. Always been, always will be. I think it's like, this is who is the spirit of Joker now. And then someone else is going to have the spirit of Joker. Do you know Heroclix, the little figures?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So apparently the Joker one, when you put him on the board, you roll the die. And how the die falls depends on what his powers and abilities are for that round. Because he's always reinterpreted constantly. So you reinterpret him in the game.
Hmm.
It's almost like a chaos power. I was like, yeah, that's Joker to me. This completely makes sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. But yeah, at the end of the day, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with this film. I'm fingers crossed. I'm hoping.
I want to be wrong. Believe me, I want to be wrong.
Yeah, but you're probably not. To be honest with you, like, I mean, with how many shootings there's been this year, like, I could see somebody.
Yeah.
It sucks. You know, it's, that we live in that world. And I mean, it's not just the United States. I mean, there's been violence in Canada. Yeah. The U.S. definitely has more easier gun laws than like, say, Canada, for example. But Canada itself is not immune to violence. I mean, there's been shootings and so on here as well, and all over the world. But
well, I mean, you had your problems this week with someone that many people find empathy and kinship with being exposed as a clown that puts on the wrong color makeup on his face, you know.
Well, it depends on who you talk to. I've always known he was a clown. Is he a racist? No, I don't think so. He's just an idiot.
He's dumb.
Yeah. But I hear what you're saying, and like I said, I'm glad you gave that perspective on this, because honestly, I wasn't even thinking the mental illness part. I was just thinking the Frederick Wortham angle here, with the Joker movie, and also like the big question mark as to why are we doing a Joker movie without Batman. But anyway, I guess we will call that an end to our Ender segment.